Good morning. I am Tim Morrison, your guest host. No, I'm not the guest host. I might seem like one because I've been gone, huh?
Yeah, well, I can understand the confusion, man. What did you do last week? You went to some kind of conference thing?
Yeah, I did. I was at the Blue Ridge Mountain Christian Writers Conference. Boy, that's a mouthful.
That is a mouthful. So what were you guys doing? So it's a bunch of writers, and you guys are sharing best practices. What are you doing out there?
Well, I was a vendor there, which meant that I got to sit there with all of my books and all of what my company does, and they had me in a fascinating position. I was up on like a little stage, and people said I looked like I was proctoring an exam or something, you know. But all the other, the actual editors and agents and publisher representatives were in this big room, and conferees could come in and meet with them one-to-one to pitch their book or get an idea or whatever, and I got to sit there and watch it all. And I interacted with the people as they were sitting there waiting to pitch. They were nervous, and I was down there not being nervous.
Right.
But I got to learn a lot about what people are writing. I got to meet some editors and agents and publishers and get the name of Right Choice Services out there and Business Radio X and what we're doing here. So it was kind of fun.
You told them you had a radio show.
Yeah.
Yeah? So that gave you a little extra gravitas?
Oh, that too. And, of course, people said, me, you know, I want to
be on the show. Yeah.
And I said, well, if you're in Atlanta, you're good.
Cool.
Well, let me try this again. I'm not the guest host. I am the host of this weekly internet radio show, and we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they've written or in the process of writing or intend to write someday. And you've already heard from my co-host, Stone Payton, who's a vital cog at Business Radio X with his own show, High Velocity Radio, as well as serving as a co-host with other broadcasts on Business Radio X. I do want to say thank you to guest host Vanessa Lowry for providing another great edition of Right Here, Right Now last week. Well, Stone, this morning's theme is kind of focused around grandmothers.
Really?
Grandmothers, yeah. Because we've got two of them in the studio who have written, and then the one who is not a grandmother is a high school...
Hopes to be someday. Hopes to be a grandmother someday. No? Aspirational grandmother.
No, no. But his grandmother had a great influence on his writing.
Oh, wow.
And as I got to thinking about it, you know, my grandmother Morrison did too. She wrote poetry. I don't do that, but Grandma Morrison wrote a poem when FDR died, and it was picked up and published nationally. And that was kind of neat, and I remember that. But let's get on to our guests. We have two women business professionals and a high school senior. We've got Ruthie Levy and Kimberly Furr and Taylor LeBaron. Ruthie and Kimberly have each written a story for their grandchildren, and I've had the joy of reading them and even editing them a little bit, and I got to tell you, they are good. Now, Taylor, I've heard about from his grandmother, who is an author, and actually she and her husband will be on Right Here, Right Now in 3 weeks on our June 7th show. And I just met Taylor this morning. His book is published, and he has an amazing journey to share. So, usual format, I'm going to talk to each one of them individually. So I'm going to start with Ruthie. Ruthie Levy is the founder and owner of And Thou Shalt Read, a book dealership that provides a wide range of Jewish books to readers and learners of all ages, and actually any and all kinds of books for people. If they ask you, you'll get it for them. You're a teacher, and you served in the U.S. Air Force for almost forever, didn't you?
Yes, I did. 12 years.
And you came out at the rank of?
Major.
Don't mess with Ruthie.
My kids call me Major Pain.
Somehow I can see
that's
that.
That's the short version.
I'm sure it is. Well, Ruthie, I welcome you to the show. And tell us about the story that you wrote. And you're in the process of writing another one, too, right?
Yes, I am. I wrote a story. It's called Baba Comes to Visit on the Airplane. I live 2,000 miles away from my grandchildren. And it's not always fun to be separated from my grandchildren. So, and of course, it's difficult to get to know your grandchildren and they to know you when you live that far away. I remember vividly a Cheerios ad, and the grandmother...
Cheerios, as in cereal.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the grandmother is sitting there playing with her grandchild with the Cheerios, and she puts some on one side and some on the other side, and she says... You know, you're one of these Cheerios over here, and I'm one of these Cheerios over here. And yes, they're far apart, but I will always be able to get to you. And it was this ad that sort of prompted me to write this story, to let my grandchildren know that no matter how far away I was, I would always be able to get to them. And, of course, I'm always thinking about them.
And you actually write about the steps, getting the suitcase out, packing, going to the airport, all of that.
Yes, I did. And, you know, as I look back on it, I don't remember exactly how I wrote it. I thought that I had written it before I left for my trip, but I may have left some blank spots so that when I actually got my seat number, I put that into the thing. I know that I took pictures as I was, you know, going through the lines and getting on the plane and all that on the day that I was actually going to California to deliver this book. I didn't actually print it out until I got there, and I inserted the pictures after I got there.
What was his reaction?
He thought it was pretty special, and he still has it. I laminated every page and had it coil bound so that he would have it forever. And I asked him, you know, do you still have my book? Oh, yes, Baba, I still have your book.
And you're working on another one?
I'm working on the next one. It's called My Name is Holly, for lack of a better term. And it's about his dog that I now have, whom he misses. So I want him to know that that Holly is a very happy dog, even though she misses Benjamin and Jack and Ava and Tucky Bear, his other doggy friend.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let me throw this one at you. Is it easier to write a story or run a business?
You can't see my expression. I think it's easier to write a story. And running a business is pretty tough. In writing these stories, I didn't find the difficulty that I might have found in other things where I'm choosing words, you know, writing a term paper for a school project or something. And, it comes together in my mind. I play with it and all that. And so when it finally gets down to the paper, it's usually pretty easy, and I wordsmith it later. But it, you know, was not that difficult. You know, I know my subject well.
Yeah, well, when it's your grandson and you, and that works well.
Yeah, and the other thing is that I wrote it from Benjamin's viewpoint. Benjamin tells the story.
That was fun. That's right. Have you seen any impact with your business? You talk to people about maybe this story. Do your clients know that you have written?
Yes, sometimes. And, of course, I've written other things. Of course, I'm still not published because I'm too busy to get things published. But the things that I write would fit into my business very well, and I'm hoping to write other things which would promote Jewish education, which is the core of my business. So, yes, it does impact my business, and people get very excited about it.
Does it give you a greater appreciation for other writers?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I have great appreciation, and it's always fun when I get a chance to meet an author to ask them about their process and what it was like for them and all that. And I'm constantly amazed when I see writers who are extremely prolific because it does take so much time to really write a good story.
Even a small thing like this.
Yes.
Now, do you have a brick-and-mortar store, or do you order books online from you? How does all that work?
I am a traveling book peddler.
Really?
I do not have a brick-and-mortar store, but I tell people my store is as close as your computer.
And so you work book festivals?
I work book
festivals.
Schools
and things like that?
I just came back from South Carolina, where I spent a couple of days doing the South Carolina Book Festival, which was a very nice event. And I'm looking forward to going back. The Jewish community has invited me to come and run their annual Jewish Book Festival come November.
Nice. And so what did you do before you got in this business?
I have been an educator for about 17 years. Well, not quite that many. Both public and private education. I was in the Jewish education world for about 10 years before I transitioned into this business. And before that, I was in combat boots.
She wears them every now and then. I've seen her at networking groups with those combat boots.
With the combat boots?
You don't want to mess with Ruthie.
So how do I get a book in your store? Let's say Stone here writes a really good Jewish educational book. How do I get you to carry it? What kind of hoops do I need to jump through?
you just ask, and I'll say, yeah, I can get that for you. And we make arrangements for me to get it to you. So sometimes I do personal delivery, and sometimes I ship.
Well, but if I'm the writer, if I'm the author, and I want you to sell my book, how does that work?
I can contact the publisher and get the books directly from the publisher. I can get it directly from the author. Or I have a mass broker that I deal with in Tennessee that brings together books from thousands of publishers and enables me to get a really wide variety of books very easily.
And I think that's the key. You know, most of us who know Ruthie know that she labels herself as the Jewish book dealer for all of Atlanta, and every now and then she gets gutsy and says for all of the Southeast. But she will order a book for her people individually. Yeah. And I know I participate, well, we both participate in a networking group, and you're constantly special ordering for people in that. Now, what she hasn't said, and maybe I shouldn't, but I will anyway, is the basement of her house is filled with books. And if you get a special invitation, you can come over and go down in and walk and see all of the stuff that you have. And you have more than just books.
Yes, I do. I carry music, I carry Jewish games and educational materials, puzzles, just all kinds of stuff.
Well, where I'm headed with all this, because it really is all about me. I mean,
I was waiting.
Well, my kid's 13. So when your kid's 13, we're not Jewish, but my kid's 13, she has a lot of Jewish friends, and you go to bar mitzvahs from like 11 to 15. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking maybe that's a marvelous source for gifts for
Absolutely.
The bar mitzvahs. So I'm really delighted to make this connection.
Yes. Yeah. One of my favorite books that I like to recommend for bat mitzvahs is a book called The Diary of Laura's Twin. It's the story of a girl who's going through her own bat mitzvah and is pushed to read a Holocaust diary. She doesn't want to do it, but she does, and in the end she really likes it, and she decides that she's going to do a twinning project in honor of somebody who was not able to have her bat mitzvah. So she goes through the whole thing, she has the party, and in comes her teacher at the end of the party, and she realizes that her teacher was the author of the diary.
Oh, my. Wow. That's powerful.
Very powerful book. Great book for, you know, girls going through their bat mitzvah.
Well, let me give you another chance to expand on that. You also put together baskets, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Don't just leave it hanging there.
Okay.
These are Jewish baskets, right?
Well, they can be Jewish,
Jewish baskets.
Well, the Jewish basket. Well, you know, you even in a church, you know, you have the arrangements of flowers or whatever. Well, this is an opportunity for you to purchase books that can be donated to your church or synagogue library. They look beautiful on the bima or the dais, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, then they have a wonderful purpose because they can go into the library. Or you can get books and donate them to a children's shelter or other situation where kids need books. And kids need books everywhere. So it's a really great opportunity to, you know, have a beautiful basket in honor of an occasion and also to do some good with those books. You know, flowers die, books don't.
Yeah. And I don't want to
I like that. Flowers die, books don't.
That's
I'm writing
right.
that down.
You do that. What I like about it, though, and is that most churches have a library of some sort, and they all seek to have information on the Jewish tradition, but don't know where to turn. And Ruthie's the person to turn to get quality books for church libraries or any library or school that will inform and educate. So let's say that all the people that are listening live and later when they do the download on it, they want to get a book from And Thou Shalt Read. How should they be in touch with you? What's the best way to make that happen?
The easiest way is to go to my website, www.andthoushaltwithat.com, and, you know, go through the archives in the shelves in the website and pick out a book. My email is sales@andthoushaltread.com. So if there's something special that you want that you don't see, or if you need some guidance, like, you know, what do I get for a bat mitzvah or a wedding, just email me, and I will help you. I'm Great. Always glad to help.
Great. Well, Ruthie, we're going to move on. I hope you'll sit around through the rest of the interview so we can open up the mic and everybody can talk and ask questions of each other, okay?
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Well, our second guest this morning is Kimberly Furr. She's a native of Atlanta, a licensed real estate broker. And I like this phrase. Kim recently decided to listen to her spirit's values and not so much to her protective guardian's fears, which means she resigned from that real job to become an independent contractor and entrepreneur. We like entrepreneurs. She works from home doing contract to close services for real estate agents. Well, welcome, Kim.
Thank you.
And we met when you had the real job, and the person who headed up the agency said I needed to meet you, and that's when I learned about Chunky Monkey and Skinny Mini. Huh? Tell me, well, tell the listeners about Chunky Monkey and Skinny Mini.
Okay. In 2007, my daughter and her two daughters came to live with me for a while, and it was a very big adjustment because at the time I was living alone, so my household changed entirely. And a few months after they had been there, they were away from home and it was blessedly quiet. And I was thinking about our lives together and how wonderful and horrible it was to have them living with me. And I mean that in a very loving way. But thoughts just came into my mind completely unexpectedly, and they suddenly became organized in my head, and they rhymed. And since I did not wake up that morning with the intention of writing a book, I just decided to jot down the thoughts. And by the end of the day, I realized I had written a children's book about my granddaughters and our lives together. And their nicknames are Chunky Monkey and Skinny Minnie. Annabelle is Skinny Minnie, and she is skinny, just like her dad. And she's tall and lean. And Kaylee is my other granddaughter, and she has a little more meat on her bones, and she loves monkeys. So that's how I came up with the name Chunky Monkey for Kaylee.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to read the first two sentences of the book because I like them. Chunky Monkey and Skinny Minnie drove their grandmother a little bit crazy because they whined and wailed and hit and spit, and they both were a little bit lazy. They called their grandmother Nanny, and she loved them with all of her heart, and she wanted to teach them how to behave but just didn't know where to start. And they liked that, huh?
Yes. After I finished the book and I read it to them, I had to read it to them every night because they loved the book so much.
So we're 3 years later, four mm-hmm. years later. What does she, how do they feel about it now?
Oh, they still like to hear the book, but they don't live with me anymore. Since that time, I have remarried, and they are living in their own home. And they still talk about the book and giggle when I mention Chunky Monkey and Skinny Minnie.
Mm. Do people that you encounter in your daily life, your business work and all of that, know that you're a writer?
Some people do. Not everybody. But some people do know about it, and they're very encouraging about it. And it is one of my life goals to get it published.
Okay. I should probably challenge you with this. Do you consider yourself a writer? All you did was write a children's book.
Right. Not really. I can tell you that one of my biggest passions is books and reading. And it thrills me that I did write that little book for them. And I haven't written much of anything else since then, although I do have some ideas. But like I said, I never really considered myself to be a creative person and never had any intention to write a book. It just kind of happened.
There it was.
Now, will you stay with children's books as you write more, or will you actually maybe consider writing a book in your profession? Or have you put much thought into that yet?
I have thought of another book that's not a children's book that I have composed some ideas about, but I haven't taken that very far.
But it, like in the business arena, a more professional thing?
No, not really. Fiction? Not really the business arena. It's something a little more personal.
But you got the writing bug, don't you?
yeah, I think I do.
And so now you also need to think about getting it published. Have you started to research that at all? And do you find that that's a big behemoth monster to tackle, or it is it relatively easy these days?
It does seem like a big behemoth monster to tackle to me. But I have gotten some very good guidance and ideas from Tim.
Thank you for that.
I have. I still have all of my notes from the first time we met.
Oh, well, that's good. We like that. Mm-hmm. We like that. I want to ask, talk about spirits, values versus protective guardians' fears. Does writing have anything to do with that, maybe?
Well, I recently read a book called Enough is Enough by a life coach. And I have to give her credit for that because she introduced me to the idea that we have two voices inside of ourselves, and one is our spirit and one is our guardian self. And our guardian self is there to protect us from harm, but sometimes it does its job too well. And it holds us back. So reading that book, in addition to many other books that I've read, have helped me to grow into listening to my spirit and not so much to my protective guardian, because I want to grow and develop and I don't want to live in fear.
I like that. And sometimes that spirit will take us where we really want to be, but it frightens us.
Exactly.
Is that kind of like what the writing journey was for you? You woke up and there it was, but do we go there?
It was kind of like that. It was part of the journey.
Mm-hmm.
A part of the journey that I feel like I've been on since about 2007. And it's just kind of opened myself up to the idea that maybe I am a lot more creative than I ever gave myself credit for.
Well, that's good. Gotta ask you this one, too. Are you willing to share your story with others? And if so, you know, Skinny Minnie and Chunky Monkey, how might people get that story?
Well, if I could get it published, I could share it. I have shared it with some people, not in book form, mm-hmm. of course, not illustrated yet or anything. And you also gave me another idea about a series of books about Chunky Monkey and Skinny Minnie.
Oh.
Because I did have another story to tell about Annabelle and her first trip to the beach.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any contact information if people just want to email you and say, tell me more about your writing journey, give me encouragement? How would they do that? How would they be in touch with you?
I have an email address.
Okay.
Should I share that?
Sure, if you're comfortable with it.
Okay. It's Kim Furr, F like in Frank, URR, 56 at yahoo.com.
That's pretty simple.
That's my email address.
Okay. Your name, 56 at yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
I want to ask about the coaching a bit, if I might. How did you go about shopping for a coach? That seems like such a personal decision. And there's so many people that represent themselves as executive coaches or life coaches. Can you tell us a little bit about that process and what compelled you to land with the person that you decided to work with?
Well, I'm not currently working with a coach. I've spoken with Tim, and I got in touch with him through someone that I worked with when I was at my real job.
Right.
And he was a very good connection. He was very encouraging and spent time with me and gave me, like I said, lots of good information and advice. But I have read books by coaches.
Well, I was also, I thought I remembered you saying something about talking with a life coach.
No, it was a book that I read.
Oh, okay.
It was written by a life coach.
Got it. Okay.
And I did go through a coaching program with Jack Canfield who wrote the Success Principles.
Yeah.
I went through one of his coaching programs.
He's almost as good as Dr. Tim. Jack's coming along.
I love it. Gotta love it. Well, I thank you for being here, and I hope you'll stick around, too, as I turn to our third guest. And
thank you.
We'll probably get back to you with other questions, okay? Great. Well, Taylor LeBaron is an articulate, athletic 17-year-old high school senior at Chrysalis Experiential Academy in Roswell, Georgia. He's a student technology leader and the author of a book called Cutting Myself in Half. He's actually been published. Not only is that he's been published, he's been on the Today Show, the real Today Show, and Good Morning America, and a whole bunch more. Boy, do I feel privileged to have him with us
today. Well,
he's
finally hit the big time.
Yeah, he's here.
He's right here, right now. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we welcome you, Taylor. And as I mentioned in the opening comments, you're here because your grandmother made me aware of you.
Yes,
and that's sweet, and I'm glad you're here. How did the book come about? Tell us about that.
Well, when I was 14, I weighed 297 pounds, and I woke up and I hopped on a scale. I saw that number, and I knew that I've got to do something, otherwise I'm not going to be alive in 10 years' time. So eventually I was able to lose the weight through a series of exercise and watching what I ate and turning fitness into a video game, taking the same aspects as one of my favorite games, Call of Duty, and turning it into something that I can manipulate and see in my mind. But the book came about after 18 months of working hard. I had lost roughly 130 pounds at that time. And my grandmother, who was already a published author, sat me down and she proposed an idea. You have a story to tell. And just said to think about it. And I put some thought into it. And it came up in my mind. It's like, this is something that I know I struggled with for years, being teased, tormented, and being limited in my career options, and not only that, but just being limited in the different social circles that I could fit into. Because unfortunately, even though just being overweight is not something that should be viewed as a weakness or something that would hold you back in a social aspect, it is. It's not fair, but this is the way that I've realized life works. And I realized that if I put my story into a book, then I would have the potential to help a lot of different teenagers and even adults who struggle with weight, because it was always a obstacle that I struggled with for years. And I knew that if I had had a book that was laid out as mine is, to be able to tell me in an easy to understand way what food is, what it's meant for, and how to balance a healthy lifestyle, and to understand that all these things you see on TV about lose 50 pounds in a month, it's you can't do that realistically and keep it off. And that's where I came in and developed this fitness plan that can really change your lifestyle and not necessarily create a diet. I've never really liked the word diet because it implies that it's temporary.
You had some help, not just necessarily in the writing, but if I recall correctly, you did consult with a doctor and other professionals, so that this is not just Taylor's, this is what I did, you do the same. You've got really substance behind it.
Yes, sir. I have consulted with the physician that's the local directing physician of the Metro Atlanta Area YMCA, as well as my personal physician, and I've also been in contact with the doctor behind the TV show The Biggest Loser.
Mm-hmm.
So I've definitely have thought out my research and talked to a lot of different people to make sure that my facts and things are correct.
You opened a lot of doors for yourself in that process, didn't you?
Yes, sir. It was most certainly an ineffable time in my life. It's something that I'll never forget, and I love speaking to different crowds at local high schools and things to really reach out to my age group.
What's that like when you go off to high schools to talk?
It's a lot of fun. I know that in grade school and everything, when I would get up to have to give a book report, it was something that I never really liked, but I've really gotten to enjoy public speaking. It's just a way of being able to get up there and interact with people that can see you as somebody real. because I am so close to their age group. I'm still in high school. I don't graduate until next week. But it's a way to really interact with your audience that you're trying to push your book to. And it's also, I think it gives the students that I speak to somebody that they can really relate to. Because when you have someone, if you have a 40-year-old doctor that's a PhD, graduated from Harvard, then while what they say may be, and more than likely is, very relevant, it, in my opinion, is harder to relate to somebody like that than to relate to someone that is your own age and is a senior in high school.
So what have you learned about losing weight that you wish other teenagers knew and try to share with them? Some specific things that you've learned or myths that you've busted in this journey of yours?
Well, one of the things that took me some time to come to is the fact that I can't blame anyone else. For a while there, I tried to pin this. This is a different fast food restaurant's fault. This is sciences and anatomy's fault because I have the fat gene. But it ultimately comes down to the fact that you have to take responsibility for your own actions. That's one thing this entire process has really taught me is whatever you do, you have to hold yourself accountable to it. And I think that's something that's important to learn at a young age. It'll not only in health, but in ethics and morality and things of that nature. Something else that I learned is that when you put your heart and soul into something, then you'll get a good return on your investment.
Oh, I like that.
Very nicely said.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have plans for more books? Or are we just enjoying this one right now?
I'm enjoying this one, but...
you could gain it all back and write Dublin Up.
Yeah.
Writing for me, if you asked me this a few years ago, I would have never said I wanted to write a book. But it's really become something I enjoy because it's a way that I can express myself. And it's also a way that you can learn about yourself and the people that you surround yourself with. Right now, I'm working on a story called Love Up in Flames. Something that I'm very passionate about is the attacks that we had on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done a lot of research on that. And basically, the story is a love story between a husband and his wife on that day and the events that unfolded on that day. And that's what I'm working on right now. And I hope to put a lot of time into that over this summer and maybe get it published as well.
You may not have fat genes, but you've got your grandmother's genes, don't you?
Yes.
That's exciting. Well, you know what? You're, of anybody your age, you're on Facebook, and you have before and after photos.
I do. My website is cuttingmyselfinhalf.com, and you can check that out, and you can see pictures of me at the Grand Canyon weighing nearly 300 pounds, and me down at 145 pounds hanging out of a large F-650 truck.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have just before pictures on my Facebook. I don't have any after yet.
You haven't gotten there yet.
We've got plenty of befores.
But, yeah. But you really, literally are half of what you used to be.
Yes, I am. And it's incredible the things I can do. About 6 weeks ago, I took a trip with a friend of mine down to Six Flags. And I was able to get on a roller coaster and not have to worry about weight limits or the bar coming up or things not working out for me because of my weight.
Wow. I never thought about that, but that's real, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's something that I was scared when I was 300 pounds because there's so many limitations on your life. My career options were limited. I couldn't really go into law enforcement or be involved in the Marine Corps or really be successful in the business world because people view being obese as a weakness and will automatically assume, oh, don't hire this guy, he's going to be lazy, when that's not the case, but it's just the way
it is. That's the way we look at it.
Yeah.
If folks want to purchase your book, what do they do?
It's available at most national retailers such as Barnes & Noble, as well as it's on the Kindle and Nook. You can order it off Amazon.com. You can also check me out on Facebook. My tag is Naughty LeBaron, Knotty LeBaron, LeBaron.
And if they want an autographed copy?
Feel free to shoot me a message over Facebook or send me an email at taylor@cuttingmyselfinhalf.com. And feel free to email me if you have any questions or you just want to have some advice.
You did have one special client, didn't you? It's on your Facebook page.
Yes, I've had a lot of good opportunities from this, as well as networking. And one of those people that I was able to meet was Coca-Cola Company.
Mm-hmm.
With the help of that company, I was able to actually run in the 2010 Olympics with the Olympic torch for exemplifying positive living through different things. I've reached out in my local community. Last year, I completed a long-term project I've been working on by donating computers that I refurbished in my computer business to the Roswell Senior Citizen Home. And so we're working on getting sponsorship from different ISPs to get internet and start a pen pal relationship.
So not only have you written, you've started like a business already.
I've always had a good eye for the dollar, and I've always understood what it meant.
Oh, you need him on your business show.
Very good. What an inspiring story.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, well, thanks for being with us. Let me open up the mics. Questions from each of you to the other, whatever.
Taylor, are you mentoring any other kids who have similar problems?
I am. I've met a lot of people that have sent me emails after they've read the book. They've sent me emails over Facebook, and I stay in contact with them, give them encouragement, and give them advice. There's a few people at my school that pop in and out and just want to have a talk about how they're doing, and I love doing that kind of thing. So,
good.
Your mother, did she lose weight?
Yes, she did, believe it or not. She was able to lose 75 pounds on the same ultimate fitness game aspect that my book took, which is kind of what makes my fitness plan unique. But it was just incredible because after I lost the weight, she realized, you know, this is really possible. And she had asked me some questions and started doing the same kind of thing that I did, and she's still working at it now. Our goal is when I come home for Christmas break from college this winter, we're going to go on a 5-mile run together.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, you're published, I understand. Did you decide to self-publish? Did you shop a proposal and a big publisher picked you up? Or tell us a little bit about that process.
Well, as far as that goes, my grandparents who have who are already published authors and have published many books, they took me under their wing and really helped me with the process and getting an agent and things of that nature. It was an overall good experience. It was very tedious, and it was kind of that whole, we're getting really, really happy, and oh, no, we're not. Because you have a lot of people that say, we're interested, send us a manuscript of the book, and you know they'll fiddle around and make their tweets. Their differences to the manuscript and such. But ultimately, HCI, which is best known for their Chicken Soup for the Soul books, they picked up the book and published it, which was a really fun experience. First time I had the right to say, my people will call your people. I had a PR team, and I had the best time going up to New York and doing work with them, and took a picture and put it on Facebook and says, these are my people. So it was an enjoyable once-in-a-lifetime experience.
You know what? I don't think it is once-in-a-lifetime for you. I think this is just the beginning.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. Well, what we're going to learn in a couple of weeks when his grandparents are here is that your grandfather was not a writer. He is now.
He is now, yes. He's been a co-author and an editor for my grandmother, but he's published a book, Terminal Justice, which I really like it. It's one of those things where essentially it's about a story about a bunch of federal agents, and their time is coming to pass on. So they go out and seek justice, Dirty Harry style.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's one of those things that it's a great book to pick up and read. Yeah.
Well, you know, Stone, maybe you sense this, but what I want to point out to our listeners is, Ruthie, you started off in the Air Force, then you went into business, and now you're writing. Kim, you've been a real estate agent, you're writing. You haven't even made it into the business world yet. You're not even out of high school, and you're doing all of this. And you know, I believe that everybody has within them a book. I talk about that book you're going to write someday. And it may just be a children's book, but it's a book. And you've done what other people have talked about doing. you've not only done it, you've stomped on that puppy and gone big time. There's hope for us, Stone.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
It sure is.
Well, you know, Stone, the clock is on us again. It happens that way. Want to remind the listeners that I always welcome your comments and suggestions about Right Here, Right Now, and I would encourage you to contact me at Right Here, that's WRITEHERE, Right Now, at gmail.com. As always, I want to thank you, Stone, for co-hosting and keeping me on track. Thank you to my three guests, Ruthie Levy, Kimberly Furr, and Taylor LeBaron. I've enjoyed our conversation, and I hope you have as well. Thank you to the listeners for joining us today for this edition of Right Here, Right Now. We broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Right Here, Right Now. BusinessRadioX.com, and the MP3 version is available later today. I am your host, not the guest host. I am your host, Tim Morrison of Right Here, Right Now. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.